Private intelligence company Stratfor founder and chairman George Freeman investigates the intersection of culture and conflict in the new book, Flashpoints, The Emerging Crisis in Europe. His follow-up to the New York Times bestsellers, The Next 100 Years and The Next Decade. Drawing on a blend of historical analysis and geopolitical forecasting, in Flashpoints, Friedman explores Europe's dominance and upheaval through the 20th century to reveal their basis in a specific set of cultural fault lines, flashpoints that remain volatile today and are due to erupt again. It's a great pleasure to welcome George Friedman to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
How do you define a flashpoint?
Well, geographically, there are points in Europe that have historically been places where conflict began. One, of course, is the borderland between Russia and the European Peninsula. Another is the Rhineland. Another is the English Channel. So it's not that geography simply defines what's going to happen, but there are certain places that are more active than others, and they're the ones to watch in the first instance to see what's happening.
When it comes to that actual determining what's coming down the road of what is happening, how much do we rely on what has happened in the past? How much do we rely on what is happening currently?
Well, as Mark Twain put it, history doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes. You know, the British and the French have fought each other many times, the French and the Germans, the Poles and the Russians. These wars don't happen just once. They happen over and over again. Doesn't mean they'll happen again. It does mean that you wonder. Then you really look at the current issue, what currently concerns people. So if we take the Ukraine as an example, okay? The Ukraine has for two centuries been the buffer for Russia against invasions in the West. The Ukraine is where they destroyed the Wehrmacht. It is vital to their interest. Therefore, anything that happens in the Ukraine is going to cause the Russians to react. At the same time, for the United States, for the past century, we've fought any possible European hegemon. First the Germans twice, then the Russians of the Cold War. Anything that indicates a rise of Russian power again is going to set American nerves, teeth on edge, put it that way. And so we've had these events take place. They resonate with historical patterns. They're not frivolous matters for either nation. They're not questions of the presidents being neurotic or something like that. And then you look at it and you say, okay, I've seen this before. It's happening again. How bad does it get?
And I guess the answer to that question of how bad does it get, does that have anything to do with the cyclical nature of it, meaning that it will escalate each time it comes around?
Well, the possibility of escalation depends on how powerful the various countries are, what resources they have. So Russia right now is far weaker than it's ever been in history. Its ability to pose the kind of challenge it posed to Germany in 1943, 1944, it really isn't there. The United States is very far away and has never fought a war in that region with large numbers of troops, and therefore its ability to really project power into the region is limited. So you look at it and say, well, we've seen this before, but the forces that are available, the economic realities that are taking place, and this range of other things, simply aren't that powerful and dynamic to make this into something like the First or the Second World War. Nevertheless, it is something that's significant and has to be watched.
Subtitle of the book is The Emerging Crisis in Europe. So you basically ask the question in the book, have conflict and war actually been banished from Europe, or is today's period of a comparative peace an interlude following the centuries of conflict that preceded it? Given that we are talking about an emerging crisis, we should be concerned, in your viewpoint.
Well, we should be concerned in two ways. First, we have to remember that from 1945 to 1992, the end of the Cold War, Europe was at peace, but it wasn't because the Europeans were peaceful. The basic decisions of war and peace weren't made in London or Paris. They were made in Washington and Moscow. These countries had lost their sovereignty, and there was a peace, a frozen peace, in Europe. Europe regained its sovereignty in 1992, both when it signed the Maastricht Treaty and where the Russians had collapsed. And from 1992 to 2008, they have had a period of extraordinary prosperity, including, therefore, a great deal of peace. But since 2008, the European Union has been in crisis continually for 7 years, has been unable to end that crisis, and now it's become political. Countries are pursuing their own interests outside of the context of the European Union. The United States is involving itself with Poland and Romania outside the context of NATO. Europe has changed. The certainties of European exceptionalism that Europe has learned from its past and has transcended nationalism are no longer clear. The European Union's crisis has created right-wing parties, left-wing parties, secessionist movements in the United Kingdom, in Spain, in Romania, and all of these things indicate a Europe returning, after only 16 years after all, to its millennia-long conflicts between nation-states. Will they become violent? Well, that's another question, but certainly they have become violent, at least in one place, in Ukraine.
As you point out in the book, Germany is again the defining problem in Europe, you say, and will once again become dynamic and powerful and insecure. What is happening in Germany?
Well, the fact of Germany is that Germany is the fourth largest economy in the world. But it's the fourth largest economy because it exports 50% of its GDP to the rest of the world, a staggering amount. Of that, one half goes to the European Free Trade Zone. Because of that export surge into the European Free Trade Zone, it's been very difficult for European lesser countries to be able to build up their economies and so on. Germany is utterly dependent on that free trade zone for its own prosperity. It has only 5% unemployment. Southern Europe has unemployment in Greece of 26%, in Spain of 23%, in southern Italy of 22%. These are the same numbers you had in the United States during the Great Depression. So on the one side, Germany has created a very comfortable situation for itself through exports, in which it has only 5% unemployment. But southern Europe is staggering in a generational depression that is not going to go away. So you have this Germany who is both doing extremely well, but is very vulnerable to cutoffs in trade, protectionism, or simply the idea that their customers can't buy for them. So it is both powerful, it has done magnificently since World War II, but it is still suffering from that tremendous dependence on others, and that leads to insecurity.
You touched on this a moment ago, and I just want to go into it in a bit more detail, but as you outline in the book, that you believe the European Union is failing and will continue to fail.
Well, there is a deep contradiction between what Germany and Austria, on the one hand, need, what Southern Europe needs, and then what we used to call Eastern Europe needs. From the Baltics to Romania, they are fixated on what the Russians are doing in the Ukraine. But they have very little support, certainly none militarily, from the rest of Europe that seems indifferent to it. Southern Europe is facing a generational depression that it's very difficult to see how they get out of. Germany and most of Northern Europe are doing relatively well. So you already have three very different Europes with three very different things on their mind. You can't have a single economic policy emanating from Brussels. You can't have a single euro because the pricing that each country needs on the euro is very different. So you have a fragmentation that's already taken place. And Greece, in my mind, is not the outlier. It's the forerunner. Everything that's happened to Greece in the past 7 years has been a forerunner for things that happened to Italy or Spain or even France. So we're watching now the Greeks seriously toying with default, seriously toying with the idea of leaving the euro. And they will then seriously think about protectionism. And that is a kind of roadmap being built for Europe.
Does it seem, just from in not only anecdotal evidence, but in the facts that you put into the book, that we are seeing more unrest, that we are seeing more hotspots throughout the world than we have in a very long time.
Well, I think we lived through a period after the fall of the Soviet Union that was anomalous. That is to say, because the main contender, the Soviet Union, had collapsed, and because the United States was an overwhelming power, it appeared that the only real issue in the world was the American response to 9/11, which was, I would argue, both understandable and excessive. But the rest of the world was pretty much at peace. We now have re-entered history, as we do after these, great events. And then a generation later, we're looking at China imposing dictatorship on itself, probing in the South China Sea. We're looking at Russia arisen again, Europeans squabbling. So, the normal situation in the world is conflict. Between 1992 and 2008, I'd argue, we had a very peculiar situation, sort of like the period that existed after World War I, sort of like the period that existed after the Napoleonic Wars. You get a period of peace, and everybody thinks, well, this is the way the world is going to be now. It never is.
One other thing, as we wrap up, that I found fascinating about the book, and that is our relationship with Britain. You believe that Britain will ultimately avoid the destabilization in Europe by pulling away from the EU and becoming closer allies and closer to the United States.
Well, it never committed as deeply to the EU as other countries on the continent did. It was always uneasy, and it was geopolitical position has always been somewhere cautious about what happens on the continent. And so it's always maintained close relations with the United States, much closer than the French or the Germans, at the same time that it tried to diversify its economy. When we look at the condition of the other countries and we look at Britain, there was wisdom in them not giving up the pound, I think. And I think that gives them options of which way to go. So quite aside from cultural relationships, which are very real and important, the British have never fully trusted that the European Union would work, and they're being borne out now.
The name of the book is Flashpoints, The Emerging Crisis in Europe. George Friedman, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, George Friedman is the author of the new book, Flashpoints. It is published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.